Welcome back, my friends, to the Derate the Hate podcast. I am your host, Wilk of WilksWorld.com, and I am so incredibly grateful that you are taking the time to join me for another powerful DTH episode. Friends, at the Derate the Hate podcast, it's all about bettering the world one attitude at a time. See, we did not create the hate, but with your help, we can derate the hate. That all starts with gratitude and personal accountability. We cannot control everything that happens to us in life, but we can control how we react to it. No matter what happens to us, how we react to it makes the difference. Friends, there is only one good thing about a bad attitude, and that is that we have the ability as individuals to change it. Here on the DTH podcast, we strive to bring you great guests and provide tools to do just that. Please be sure to share it with your friends. Subscribe if you haven't done so. Ratings and feedback are always greatly appreciated. And with that, let's get to this week's episode. Hey friends, Wilk here. Sitting in this week for me as guest host will be my good friend and fellow Braver Angel, someone who does an awful lot of work in the depolarization space just like I do, Julian Adorney. This week, he is having a conversation with Mark Johnson from The Undaunted Man. Mark is a men's coach, business and relationship coach, facilitator, and wilderness guide with more than 20 years of experience helping people and companies grow. He's been part of The Undaunted Man since 2014 and its CFO since 2016. What an incredible conversation. Julian Adorney and Mark Johnson discussing root causes, getting below the surface of toxic polarization. What leads to it? How do we get through it? You're not going to want to miss this conversation. Julian Adorney, let's go.
My name is Julian. I am filling in for Wilk on this episode of Derate the Hate. I am incredibly thrilled for this episode. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. I wanted to have this particular guest on. I'm a writer and speaker focused on preserving a liberal republic and making sure we still have democracy in 50 years. So I talk a lot about affect polarization. I talk a lot about how to knit our communities back together. I talk a lot about how to get back to the kind of dense, close-knit civic society that we all kind of yearn for, and how to move away from this sort of battle, not just ideas, but this battle of people where we all kind of hate and fear people on the other side and we all sort of go at each other. And with that goal in mind, I am thrilled to invite my friend and mentor, Mark Johnson, on the show to talk about that. Mark has been a friend for many years. He's actually the one, I'm very excited for this because I've talked in public about my own journey through affect polarization, through this kind of toxic polarization, and how I've gone from very, very angry and scared towards non-libertarians and very, very, you know, gripping it very, very tight, gripping my ideology very, very tight, and making that ideology a core part of who I am, to holding these ideas much more loosely and being much more open to different ideas and having far more deep and personal friendships with people across the aisle and across the political spectrum. And in so doing, finding a lot of joy and a lot of peace and a lot of connection in so doing. And Mark, the reason I'm thrilled to have him here, he's actually the person who helped me through that. And so I'm thrilled to have him on to take kind of a deeper cut at toxic polarization and get below the kind of surface level stuff and talk about it more from a spiritual standpoint, an identity standpoint, a kind of deep psychological standpoint. I should also mention, so Mark and I have an interesting relationship because he's my friend and my mentor. We're also clients of each other. I'm a client in his men's group. He runs the Undaunted, or he co-runs a group called the Undaunted Man, which is a spiritually focused men's organization. I'll let him talk more about that a little bit. So I'm a client of his, and that's actually how I got to do this work, and let go of my own toxic polarization. He is also a client of mine. I do marketing for a couple different folks, and Mark's organization is one of them. That's obviously not why I had him on the show. I have him on the show because I'm very, very excited for this conversation, but I want to kind of mention that relationship. So yeah, Mark, why don't you tell everyone a little about yourself?
Yeah. Thanks, Julian. I've been, focused on this kind of work for my entire life, actually. I remember talking about politics with my parents when I was a kid in the 70s and 80s, and I was a little kid in the 70s. And so And it's so it's always been an interest of mine. And I had my own journey through effective polarization. I could count, I could measure eras of my life when I was very liberal and then very conservative and then very liberal and then very conservative and then very liberal. And as I oscillated back and forth, I discovered that not only there is no side that has a monopoly on truth, no side using air quotes. There's no political party that has a monopoly on truth. And there are absolutely no politicians that hold a monopoly on truth because that's not what motivates them. Their motivations are very different. It's not about the pursuit of capital T truth. It's not a pursuit of what the quote unquote right thing is anymore. It might have been that way 200 years ago, but it's definitely not that way now. And once I saw the damage that was being done and experienced fractured relationships in my own life as a result of disagreements over things that ultimately are trivial when it comes to day-to-day living, I went about looking for ways to find a way out of the morass. And I've been resolutely working on it, something like that, really since about 1999, before effective polarization even became a thing.
That's great to know. And yeah, I think a lot of us had journeys like that of, you know, we were liberal, we were conservative, we were libertarian, we were socialist. I think most of us, if we're honest with ourselves, our views have evolved. And to me, that's one of the really sad things about our current climate is that most of us are the product of these sort of 20, 30, 40 years of view evolution where it's like, oh, I believe this now. I didn't believe this 10 years ago. Or look back on our views 10 years ago, like, wow, I'm really glad I didn't believe that now. And so we can have sort of grace for our own evolution. But one of the very tragic things about our political moment right now is that we don't have as much grace for our opponents. We think that their views are carved in stone and can never be changed, that they have never evolved, they never will evolve. And we sort of lose our faith in the humanity. And so I'm just curious, how do you think we get that back?
Well, I think there's several ways to do it. And it really depends on the individual, what each individual's, everybody individual has their own obstacle to getting it back. The first and kind of global thing is to recognize that if you believe all the same things at 50 that you did at 20, that implies that you haven't learned anything in the intervening 30 years. Mm-hmm. Your experience of life hasn't taught you anything. You haven't gained any new knowledge, you haven't integrated anything new in your life. And that would, if that were true, and that's true for no one, by the way, but politicians like to pretend that it's true and ideologues like to pretend that it's true because if that was actually true, not only would that be profoundly sad, if we actually viewed that as a good thing, that should be viewed as profoundly dangerous. Because the world evolves, the world changes, new information comes to light, new experiences happen. If we can't integrate that new information, we're going to find ourselves in a world of hurt. So that's the first step. The second step is to recognize that if we feel some kind of way about people that have a different political point of view that we have, and we feel angst or anger or hatred or contempt for people that have a different viewpoint than us, then that's not about the person that you have contempt for. It's about something that's going on inside of yourself. And that's the journey that we can all take. And that's the journey that ultimately leads to the kind of the death of this crazy polarized political atmosphere.
That's a really great point. And that's something we talk about a lot. Both one-on-one and in the men's group, right, is this focus on you can control your own experience of life. And ultimately, first, that's the only thing you can control. You can't really control those people out there. And it's a terrible idea to try. But also the idea that you can control your own experience of life, that's not just woo-woo or trivial. That's the only thing that matters, because our only experience of life is the internal stuff. It is, are we triggered? Are we at peace? Do we feel joy? Do we feel rage towards our opponents? Do we feel the humanity? And that's all within our control. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we are in control of it, whether we believe it or not. And we determine our own experience of life. And even, you know, what's the, there's an old song lyric that I love from a Rush song in the 80s called Free Will. And he says, even if you do not choose to not to decide, you still have made a choice. So even if you say, no, I'm just going to, I'm blowing with the political winds. And I don't, you know, and just these things outside of me are happening to me, and I react to them. Your choice to simply allow the winds of change to blow through you and create these reactions in you that you then choose not to take responsibility for, that's still a choice. You are still in control of that. And this is actually one of the hardest things to get people to see, because they think they're, people think they can't control their emotions. They think they're not responsible for their emotions. They think they're not responsible for their reactivity to life. And we are all utterly responsible, because who else could possibly be responsible for our life and our experience of life?
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I do think part of the way out through this sort of toxic polarization we find ourselves in is if all of us start taking responsibility for our emotions, for our experience of life, we stop looking out the window, we stop blaming all those people out there for how we feel, and we start looking in the mirror. It's like, oh, I'm triggered. Not you triggered me, I'm triggered. What do I want to do about that?
That's exactly right. You know, this is one of those things, and I was first confronted with this idea actually by, I had this amazing English teacher in the 10th grade, believe it or not, and they don't do this kind of thing anymore in school. But we actually read Man's Search for Meaning in the 10th grade.
That's amazing.
And so this put me on this particular path. And, you know, Viktor Frankl, the author of the book, concentration camp survivor, was in the camps for years. And he wrote a book about that experience. And he was a psychologist before he went into the camps. And his experience in the camps informed his point of view on how to support people and treat people after he got out of the camps and survived. His most famous quote is, when talking about people that were in the camps, that, well, most of the people in the camps were miserable and unhappy and depressed, and for obvious reasons, right? On the surface, it would be insane to think of something else. That how else should anybody react knowing that they were going to go to the gas chamber and die? But he observed that there were people in the camps that, rather than choosing to suffer and sink into the depths of despair, walked around comforting people, giving away their last bit of food, giving away their clothing, offering comfort to people that were suffering. And those people, it's not that those people that were walking around comforting people were special or superhuman. They just chose to face their circumstances with dignity and with compassion and with caring, rather than with fear and hatred and contempt and resentment. And so what Dr. Frankl learned from that experience, he put it in, he said this quote, same quote in several different ways in several different times, but he says, everything can be taken from a man, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. Mm-hmm. And even as a 10th grader, that hit me like between the eyes, even though I didn't really fully understand the implications of it. And I will tell you now, however many years later, I do see the absolute truth of that statement. And it's been corroborated through every spiritual tradition that you can imagine, and every version of healthy psychology that I can find. It all boils down to that, how we choose to experience life, regardless of our circumstances.
Yeah, that's incredibly powerful. And yeah, I think you're exactly right. One thing I wanted to ask, switching gears a little bit. So, so like I mentioned in the intro, one of the things that you helped me work through, which has been absolutely tremendous and I'm incredibly grateful for, is that I did have this sort of toxically polarized way of viewing the world in my 20s. I was very libertarian and I still lean pretty libertarian in some ways, you know. This isn't about letting go of your convictions or just becoming like a gray mass of tapioca who has no ideas and no beliefs. You can maintain the courage of your convictions. But one thing I'm really grateful to that you helped me see is that decoupling my ideology from my identity. So in my 20s, it was, hi, Julian Dorney, libertarian, nice to meet you. That was who I was. That was my identity, or so I thought. And now it's, you know, Julian Dorney, human, nice to meet you. And there are different things that I could talk about if you push me deeper on human, you know, Christian, fiance, soon to be husband, you know, author, all these things, community member, neighbor, whatever it is. But the sense of decoupling and then my political beliefs are a relatively small part of that. And I was wondering if you can talk about, like, why is it that we associate our political ideology with our identity? Why do we bundle those two things together? And how can we unbundle them? How can we get back to a place of seeing our identity as human, or at least as something healthier than just our political beliefs?
Well, the first step is to recognize that our identity, our true identity isn't based on anything that is external to us. We're not trained that way. We're not brought up that way anymore. We used to be, but it's been a long time since we've been brought up that way. But generally, the ego, people's egos are more comfortable when they can create an other. The ego thrives on comparison. Everybody's ego thrives on comparison. And that is a profoundly limiting way to view life. And so the very first step, after you realize that you can choose you're in control of choosing your attitude, the next step is to recognize that who you are isn't based on any superficial characteristic or any belief system that you've chosen to adopt. Politicians in our country have gotten, and actually all over the world, have gotten extremely good at marketing their political teams in the same way that football teams market their teams. And so in the same way that people adopt fandoms, whether it's sports teams or Harry Potter or you name the fandom, as part of their identity and something that makes them special and different and unique, politicians have adopted those same strategies. And so now you can get connected to a politician or a political party in that same way. And when you recognize that the value of that identification with a political party or a politician or political belief is exactly as valuable as identification with a sports team or Harry Potter fandom, which is to say, not valuable at all, that's the first step to liberating yourself from the kind of the grasp of the polarization we're dealing with right now.
That makes a ton of sense. And yeah, there's a key distinction that you pointed to of like, there's nothing wrong with liking a football team or liking Harry Potter or liking a politician. The danger, the immense danger, comes when we identify with it. Julian Dorney, Harry Potter fan, Julian Dorney, Broncos fan, you know, rather than Julian Dorney or Mark Johnson, you know, human.
Right, right. And when we identify something, it's helpful if people understand what we mean when we say identity. They consider that fandom as a piece of who they actually are. But the truth is that if that politician dies tomorrow, or that political party goes away, or that sports team goes out of business, they are still there. So nothing that is temporary, nothing that can be taken from us is us. And everything can be taken from us. Quite literally, everything can be taken from us. And so identifying with things that are ephemeral in that sense is trying to build security on a foundation of sand. It's mm-hmm. actually less substantial than sand. Most of the things that we build identities on could pop like a soap bubble and just be mm-hmm. gone. And then what are you left with? And so if you're dependent on those identifications to feel safe or secure or powerful or strong, then you're really leaving yourself extremely vulnerable because all of those things could be taken from us in an instant. And then we're left with nothing, and then we're lost. So it's far better to build our foundation on the one thing that can't be taken from us.
That's a great point. So how do we do that? How do we shift our mindset away from identifying with all these external ephemeral things that can be popped like a soap bubble in a heartbeat? And how do we consciously change our mindset into away from building our house on sand and towards building our house on a really solid foundation of rock?
We look inward. Mm-hmm. We look inward. We begin to understand our psychology. We gain an understanding of why we are the way we are. And then we look deeper than that to find out what's underneath the psychology. And everybody's got their own definition of spirit. I'm not here to tell anybody or promote any particular religious belief, but the spark of life, however you define that for yourself, lies underneath our psychology. It is the prime mover before our psychological profile. And that's the focus. You focus there. That is the one thing that cannot be taken from us. Everything else can, even our psychology can and will change over time. Mm-hmm. But that spark of life, that indwelling spirit, however you define that for yourself, that's the one thing that can't be taken. And when you ground your life on that, then everything else that happens around us is still happening. It's still relatively important. It still needs to be dealt with. But our joy, our happiness, our psychological security isn't reliant on external circumstances. It's reliant on the one thing that can never be taken.
That's a really great point. And yeah, very, very powerfully put. That was fantastic. One other thing I wanted to touch base on, because this is actually something we were talking about last week when we were kind of prepping for this. And I thought the conversation went in a really beautiful direction. So I wanted to kind of bring that up a little bit. One of the reasons that I was so ideologically libertarian was this idea that I had some sort of toxic authority figures in my past, you know, mm-hmm. and that happened at a relatively young age when I was still sort of forming all these memories. And so then when I got old enough to look at the government, I was like, oh, that's the ultimate authority figure. And so I engaged in this sort of bundling of taking my experience of toxic authority and transposing that onto the government. And that's where a lot of my own kind of toxic ideology, this sort of white knuckling, everything has to be libertarian, we must shrink the government at all costs. If you aren't with me, you're against me. Mm-hmm. That's where this came from, because I was on a deeply subconscious level. I had my intellectual reasons for being libertarian, and I think all of us do, but much deeper than that, on a deep psychological level, I was conflating the government with this sort of toxic authority experience when I was younger. And that's where my anger and fear came from. And I was wondering if you can talk a little about that and how we can kind of move past that. And if you think that's a common thing, and if so, like how we can move past that, engage in that kind of unbundling where we see things as they are, not based on something else that happened to us.
Yeah, I mean, the way out is what I just described. And here, but what you're pointing to is what happens if you don't start looking mm-hmm. inward. Well, there are a couple layers to this. The first is that modern people these days, especially modern people, tend to dismiss kind of our animal. They dismiss our lizard brains. They kind of assume that our lizard brains don't affect us anymore because we're such in such a technologically advanced society. And that is a fallacy. That's a fallacy. We are, it's very obvious that all of us, each of us, are deeply impacted by our lizard brains. It's also true that most of our psychological profile, at least in the not in the most granular sense, but kind of in the grossest sense, is formed when we're very young, by the time we're 4 or 5 years old, give or take. And so if you're not looking inward, if you're not kind of examining, looking for that inward spots, spark of life and grounding yourself on that, we're really just running around. We're like lizard brained 5 year olds running around in adult bodies, trying to make sense out of the world and making a mess of it, basically. That's the fundamental problem. And the solution to that, number one, is to be humble enough to recognize that we are all still deeply, profoundly impacted by our instinctual brain. And then understanding this fundamental psychological truth that, for example, the trauma that you described with the toxic authority figure, well, you learned a self-defense mechanism against that toxic authority figure when you were extremely young. And what we all do, unless we examine ourselves and do the therapeutic work that needs to be done, is, well, you adopted that defense mechanism and it worked for you. You survived. And then you were applying that through every area of your life. And you were viewing every area of your life through the lens of that defense mechanism, influenced by your instinct, by your lizard brain. Mm-hmm. And it was distorting your ability to perceive the world as it is. And that is the fundamental mechanism that we all struggle with to a greater or lesser degree, unless we're willing to learn to look inward and take responsibility and really see that these kind of these responses that we have that we think are completely rationally thought out and will hold up under the cold light of logic, don't.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I really liked your point about the kind of lizard brain. I think we all assume that we've come to our beliefs rationally. But in marketing, we have, I was a marketer for many years before as an author. And in marketing, we had a phrase or a saying, people buy with their hearts and justify with their heads. And I got dinner with a guy some time ago. He was very high up in this fairly well-known, like, liberal media institution. Very, very, like, almost intimidatingly smart guy. And I'm sure he had read 1,000 books on the value of, he was progressive, on the value of progressivism. Mm-hmm. But I had a conversation with him. He said, I don't think that's why he was progressive, though. It wasn't that he read all these books and that's why. And the reason I say that is because he said a line to me at dinner. He said, all conservatives are assholes. And I was kind of taken aback by that. Because it's like, okay, well, I have some conservative beliefs. You know, I'm marrying into a semi-conservative family. And so I kind of brought this up with him. And I was like, look, I'm not, you know, I'm not offended by what you say. You know, we all have our different ideas. And if I were to be offended, that'd be my choice. And I choose not to be. I wasn't that explicit, you know. But I said, look, I'm not offended by this or anything. But I'm curious, why do you believe this? Like, is there something in your past that happened or some sort of psychological experience that made you believe all conservatives are assholes? And instantly he said, yes, my dad was an asshole and he's a conservative. And it was like, oh, so that's the root of the whole thing. You know, all the books we read, not that being progressive is intellectually wrong, not that it's intellectually bad, but all the books we read, they're kind of window dressing to justify that deep-seated belief that some of us may have developed, you know, and I'm raising my hand here, like, I did this. Some of us may have developed when we were like 4 or 5 years old, and then we just try to justify that throughout the course of our life as adults.
Yeah, I mean, when we view our lives through a singular lens, particularly a lens that was developed when we were didn't even have fully developed brains yet, we spend the rest of our lives you know, you're familiar with the term confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
Seeking confirmation for how we see the world rather than trying to see the world as it actually is. And at a psychological level, that's really, you could argue that that's a root cause of the polarization that we're dealing with now. Most people spend their time looking for evidence to confirm their preconceived notions or to validate things that they've been feeling since they were 5 years old, rather than trying to see the objective truth of how the world is. Mm-hmm. And that's why you see progressives now trying to claim that there is no objective truth. They're so invested in their confirmation bias that anything that threatens their pursuit of confirmation bias is immediately dismissed as untrue and not even a possibility, which is also why the scientific method is now under attack and why we've seen the progressive or the undermining of the greatest scientific institutions and publications in the history of the world by this ideology that promotes confirmation bias over the pursuit of capital T truth.
Mm-hmm.
And in that environment, getting away from polarization is impossible. It's quite literally impossible, because unless we're all pursuing capital T truth, we're all just operating off of our lizard brain 5 year old selves in adult bodies that are driving us forward and driving us into this, and it, I'll use this word because it's actually true, childish polarization. Because the way people respond to Joe Biden and the way people respond to Donald Trump and they and to all these controversial politicians or political whatevers, it really is childish.
Mm-hmm.
It's a childish response to a very real challenge that we're all facing, very real challenges that we're all facing.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And yeah, it is. I spend a lot of time on Twitter. And so some of the people who are yelling either at me or at, you know, other people, or even people on my side who are yelling at people who I would disagree with, I can look at them as like, oh, you're kind of having a tantrum right now. That's interesting.
Right. Right. And this is the reason I left Twitter.
Yeah. And once we realize that could be powerful, because I think a lot of us get caught up into like, oh, someone's yelling at me, so I have to yell back. We engage our fight or flights. And so we think, oh, I have to stand up for myself, or I'm a sissy, you know, or I'm a pussy, or whatever it is. And if I don't stand up for myself, I'm betraying the cause, I'm lying down, I'm a doormat. And so we start yelling back at people who are yelling at us. We fight fire with fire. And one thing I found a lot more helpful, and I'm curious if we could talk about this, is James Baldwin had this phenomenal quote of, I imagine one of the reasons people cling to their hates so stubbornly is because they sense once hate is gone, they'll be forced to deal with pain. And that quote just absolutely floored me, because it changed how I saw online trolls, and it changed how I saw people who just yell at me or yell at my friends or even yell at my political adversaries online as a hobby. And I started to realize, you know, there's some really deep pain there. Because not a lot of healthy people spend their days yelling at strangers online. That's not the mark of someone who has a great, you know, a great marriage, wonderful relationship with kids, a deep connection to, you know, God or spirit or being or fellow or your highest self, whatever you want to call it. That's someone who's sort of like a four-year-old not getting what they want. They're in intense pain right now. And so how we respond to that, you know. And so then how do we respond to that? You know, I think we respond to that with a certain level of grace and compassion rather than just like yelling at their four-year-old lizard brain for throwing a tantrum right now.
I think that's true. I think that's the perfect way to express it. And then the question becomes how, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because these lizard brain four-year-olds are doing a lot of damage in the world, right? they're doing a lot of damage in the world because the loud voices they've made political inroads. They're changing they're undermining democratic they're undermining the universal principles that the United States was founded upon. They've brought back racism. They've brought back sexism. They brought back discrimination with a vengeance and with righteous fury. All that is happening through these childish temper tantrums. And so, then the question becomes, how does someone that isn't trapped in their 5-year-old lizard brain, how do we deal with these things? And you're right. The answer is not to get equally angry and start throwing zingers on Twitter or whatever. The answer is we have to adopt the perspective of an adult and view them. I think you're right, with compassion and with kindness, and also see them for the children that they are. Because you're right, they are operating like children throwing a temper tantrum. And how do you get a child to stop throwing a temper tantrum? Well, you basically wall them off, you fence them off so he can't break anything or hurt himself, and you wait for the tantrum to burn itself out, and then you treat them with love and kindness and make them feel safe without validating their tantrum, without validating whatever it is that led to the outburst. And that's the mistake that we're making now is we're not doing those things, or not, there's not enough of us doing those things. There's not enough of us responding like adults, and there are way too many of us validating things that really shouldn't be validated because they simply have no basis in truth.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. You made a really good point of this isn't, ideologues, I would say, or some of these, 4-year-old temper tantrums, they are very dangerous, and this isn't a political point. This isn't like, oh, the left's bad, the right's bad. This is a human point of the people kind of throwing these tantrums can gain power. They can be influential, and then they can tear down the things a lot of us value. So this isn't a call to just accept them or validate them. This is a call to speak up, to maintain the courage of our convictions, but to do so in a way that we don't sink down to that childish level, to not validate them and also not hate them.
Right. And we do that. We absolutely do that by staying focused on universal principles. Number one, that's at the external level, and at the internal level, by focusing on the one thing that can never be taken from us, because that's the foundation from which we can build a psychology and a spiritual life, whatever that looks like for you, that isn't based on fear. And it's not based on any of the base emotions. It's based on love and care and compassion. And most importantly, it's based on security. Because your psychological security, your mental security, your mental stability is based on the one thing that is immovable, and it's impossible to be impacted by external circumstances. Because when we build our safety on things that can be taken from us, there's always going to be fear, because we're always going to feel in danger and we're always going to feel at risk. Because something can happen that can take all that away from us. So that is a fundamentally insecure way to live.
Yeah, that's a really great point and a very powerful point. I could happily talk about this all day, and we actually have over the course of our relationship, but we are coming up on time. So where can people find you if they want to learn more?
Theundauntedman.org is the best place to get a hold of me. I am I'm not super active on social media these days. I found that even though I know better, I was still getting pulled into a lot of childish antics on my own part. And the best way for me to stop that was to get off of social media.
That's a great point. And yeah, that self-awareness is something we should all aspire to. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming on, Mark.
Thanks, Julian. It's a real pleasure. Take care.
You too.
Friends, if there's anything in this episode that provided exceptional value to you, please make sure to hit that share button. Share it with your friends, share it far and wide. And of course, if you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe right from our website so you can get the Derate the Hate podcast sent to your email inbox every week. So this is Wilk wrapping up for the week saying get out there, be kind to one another, be grateful for everything that you've got, and remember, it's up to you to make each and every day the day that you want it to be. If there is something that you would like to share with me, you can catch me on most social media platforms, or you can email me directly, wilk@wilksworld.com. With that, my friends, I am going to back on out of here, and we will catch you next week. Take care.